May it please the Court, my name is Bill Hoffman. I'm the General Counsel for the Clark County School District in Las Vegas, Nevada, and I represent Superintendent Rolfes, Principal Crehan, Assistant Principal Thompson, and Teacher Sefcik. The difficulty in this case is not to determine the law regarding whether valedictorians can give proselytizing speeches at a public high school graduation. In the Ninth Circuit, Cole and Lassonde give us the answer to that question, and the answer is no. The difficulty is whether dismissal of the claims for damages against the individual defendants is appropriate at this early stage in the proceedings where the entire factual record has not been developed. We are mindful of the Court's reluctance to decide grave constitutional issues on such a record at the pleading stage. The United States Supreme Court's decision, however, in Pearson v. Callahan regarding the analysis of qualified immunity simplifies this question. In its discretion, this Court can immediately go to the clearly established prong of Saussure and first judge the reasonableness of the individual defendant's action in this case when they prevented Brittany McComb from giving portions of her proposed valedictorian speech. For the purposes of qualified immunity analysis, we only need to focus on the specific facts that the Court has found or determined in Cole and Lassonde to be critical. In the allegations before the Court and that were presented at the district court, plaintiffs correctly alleged this is a public high school graduation ceremony of a high school of a political subdivision in Nevada, controlled by an elected board of school trustees and controlled by the administration of the district. Plaintiffs alleged that the arena that was rented, where the ceremony was conducted, was rented and paid for by the district. And they alleged that the amplification system that was used at the graduation was controlled by the district. In fact, they alleged that the and its administration retained control over all pertinent aspects of the ceremony, the sequence of events, the selection of speakers, and so forth. And plaintiffs also assert that the administrators claimed and asserted final authority to approve the speeches. And they alleged that that control was exercised as required by guidance issued by the superintendent in April of 2003.
Mr. Hoffman, maybe we can get to it a little bit faster by asking you, what specific element does the respondent claim is not presently before the court that would be before the court in a summary judgment motion? Is there anything?
Oh, we don't think that there is. We think that their argument, I think that their argument would be that somehow that Brittany McComb, the speaker, had retained primary control of the content of her expression. I think that's what they would have to say. But in fact, they did not retain, she did not retain primary control of that expression.
Well, that depends on whether you read the regulations of the school district itself in paragraphs 3 and 4 of the regulations, the general counsel's guidance letter, or Cole and Lassonde.
Well, if you start with the regulation, the
regulation, that seems to give her control.
The regulation says that if she retains control, if the speaker retains control, then the speaker can proceed, which is precisely the reason for the general counsel's guidance, was to address that issue in light of Lassonde, which actually was issued by this court just before the general counsel's guidance came out.
Paragraph 3 of the order says student-initiated, non-school-sponsored religious speech is acceptable. And then where students or other private graduation speakers are selected on the basis of genuinely neutral, even-handed criteria and retain primary control over the content of the expression.
Well, first of all,
what you're saying is that she was told you don't have control over your expression.
Well, we believe she was told that she didn't have control over the expression, and plaintiffs allege that she had to submit a draft and that sort of thing. Paragraph 3 of that same regulation says student-initiated, non-school-sponsored religious speech. Well, that's the question. This was school-sponsored. This was the graduation that for this public high school.
I get your point.
So we think that when with the general counsel's guidance that says specifically graduation speeches shall be reviewed for content, and the proselytizing language should be removed, and that a neutral disclaimer is not a substitute for that review. So we believe that she did not retain primary responsibility for the content. For qualified immunity analysis, we think there are two inevitable conclusions. First of all, that the administrators in this case reasonably believed that they had the authority as well as the obligation to review the proposed speech. Secondly, we believe that well-informed administrators would compare the language of Cole and Lassonde, which was identified by this court to be proselytizing. They would compare that to the portions of the speech that were objectionable, we thought, with Brittany McComb. And we've provided a side-by-side analysis of that language in our opening brief at pages 19 through 21. We believe that the similarities are remarkable. It's our position that this court could find, as a matter of fact, that the edited language is virtually the same as Cole and Lassonde, and that this court should determine that that language was proselytizing. And if it's true, if the court decides that that edited language was proselytizing, then we believe you can go to the first prong of Saussure, because there's no constitutional right of this student to deliver a proselytizing speech at a high school graduation. But even if it's not true as a matter of law, we nevertheless believe that our administrator's decision in this case to allow a substantial portion of the speech to be given and to only excise those pieces which appear to be similar to the Lassonde and the Cole speech, to excise those pieces, that was a decision that was reasonable under the circumstances. The law was clearly established under Cole and Lassonde that proselytizing language can't be presented, and our administrators were trying to make that choice. Frankly, had the administrators not made the choice, we believe they could have violated the Establishment Clause. Administrators are in a difficult situation. They have to decide who's going to sue them. Is it going to be the speaker who says they have a right to give proselytizing language, or is it, or do you choose to have the captive audience sue the school district for allowing that proselytizing language? And so the decision that the administrators made in this case entitled them to qualify.
I have some difficulty imagining that lawsuit, the one by the audience. I mean, the school district could certainly make it clear that the speakers are speaking their own mind and are not speaking for the school district, and the audience could then complain that, well, you know, they're uncomfortable sitting there listening to it, but they could hardly say this was an establishment, that this was the school district speaking.
Well, that's an issue that Lassonde addressed, and the Lassonde court realized that the disclaimer would not be appropriate. The standard, we think, is
it would not be sufficient.
Right. We think that.
How about the students that are compelled to go to the graduation? Would they have a case?
Well, I think that they would have a case. They're the victims of the coercion. The second prong, the establishment says, are you entangled? The Establishment Clause jurisprudence is, does the school district become entangled by allowing the speech to be presented? And even if they can disclaim.
Are you relying on Lemon? Are you relying on Lynch? Are you relying on Lee versus Weissman?
Well, we're relying on Cole and Lassonde is what we're relying on, but I think Lee versus Weissman goes to that same point. Lee versus Weissman recognizes that the problem of the coercion prong.
For a religious exercise, and you say that proselytizing under Lassonde equals prayer equals religious exercise.
Right. I'll reserve the remainder of my time.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Anand Agneshwar, and I represent Brittany McComb in this matter. Obviously, my job here is to explain to this Court why this case is not Cole and Lassonde. The appellant's argument is really only makes sense if you think that this case can just be put into the halls of Cole and Lassonde, and it cannot.
It's actually an even tougher job than that, because for purposes of qualified immunity, you not only don't have to show it's Now, that it's different from Colonel Assad, but it's so different it doesn't fall within the penumbra, such that a reasonable administrator reading those cases wouldn't feel that what they did here was reasonable.
Right. And, Your Honor, there's one critical distinction between Colonel Assad and this case, and that's the difference in how two students were treated. In this case, it wasn't just one graduation speaker that was at issue, as it appeared to be in Colonel Assad, because while there may have been other speakers, what they talked about was not before the court. But what happened here is that the three top valedictorians were asked to speak. They were given suggestions as to what to speak about, and those suggestions, in fact, gave them guidance, didn't give them requirements. Two of these students chose to incorporate religious themes into what they spoke about. Janine Oler, she spoke about her Heavenly Father, and she made it clear to the audience that her Heavenly Father is behind everything she does, and she couldn't survive without her Heavenly Father. She couldn't have gotten where she was, and if the audience would only find their inspiration, they too would succeed. So appellant's argument is that the school district exercised primary control.
She didn't say find the inspiration in the same Heavenly Father. She didn't say she was urging them to find their own inspiration wherever they may find it, which is quite different from what your client did or purported to do.
Your Honor, I don't think that's clear from the record at this stage, but even beyond that, assuming that's true, the assumption that appellant is making here is that Brittany McComb's speech was censored only because of proselytization, and that is simply not the case. I think it's important to look at the actual comments that were made on Brittany's speech, and that's at page 35 of the appellant's excerpts of records. What's interesting about Brittany McComb's speech is that it's only seven paragraphs long. In the first four paragraphs, there was no edits whatsoever. And in the last paragraph on the first page, what was the reason why it was censored was not because it was proselytization, but, quote, and I'm quoting from what the school official said, it identifies a particular religion. So that was the raison d'etre for them to censor the first part of the speech.
Well, it doesn't matter. I mean, if they're entitled, in fact, to do it, the fact that they didn't articulate specifically the right reason at the time doesn't really matter. If it is in fact proselytizing, and you know, I must say, your client's speech really sounds a lot more like proselytizing than the other graduation speaker, and sounds very much like. I mean, if you looked at the comparisons on pages 19 to 21, or 19 to 21 of the blue brief,
they're pretty
compelling.
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I think if you look at if the court is going to engage in parsing out when a speech becomes proselytizing and when it's not, then it's important to look at it in context. What is Brittany McComb talking about in her speech? She was given a certain number of suggestions, and these are the suggestions she was given. Say things that come from the heart, and this is at page 19 of the additional record. Reflect on how you can help the world. What can you add as a person or group? Reflect on what you want out of life. What do you want for others? Interject hope. There is nothing in these suggestions telling the students not to answer with religious viewpoints. There is nothing to say not to talk about their religious viewpoints. And a religious person reading these suggestions might well believe they could not incorporate these suggestions without talking about their religious viewpoints.
Is your point that this religious expression, similar to the Ten Commandments in the park outside the Texas State Capitol, when seen in context, is not a religious exercise?
No, I'm not saying that, Your Honor. What I'm saying is that when these were the suggestions that were given, what Brittany did was she answered those. She did what they said, and it required her to talk about her religious beliefs. And in response to Judge Kosinski's question, the title of her speech was Filling the Void. She explained that her life was empty until she discovered Christ.
Do you see a difference between her testifying to her faith and her proselytizing others?
I believe that's the distinction that the school made. In fact,
it's hard to get around. I mean, he says, and he gave us a choice to live for ourselves. I mean, she doesn't just say, you know, this is what happened to me. Eternity or to live for something greater than ourselves, eternity and his love. I mean, this is urging the audience to essentially join her faith. Quite different from saying, I found salvation, I found peace, I found strength. I hope you find a way of finding strength as well, which is what the other speaker said.
Well, I don't think it,
I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you a hope in the future. I mean, you know,
well, she prefaced that by saying, if you do this, which is different from how Cole and Lassonde articulated it. And both Cole and Lassonde, they made express invitations to the audience to accept Christ. What Brittany was doing was explaining how she got where she is and simply expressing her hope for other people, which is what she was asked to do in these suggestions.
Well, but Your Honor, there were very specific suggestions, what she said, that, and I can guarantee 100%, no doubt in my mind, that if you choose to fill yourself with God's love rather than the things society tells us will satisfy you, you will find success. I mean, she's addressing the audience. She's urging them to follow her path. It's really quite different from saying, this is a path where I found satisfaction.
Well, Your Honor, I think it's a fine line to draw when somebody speaking from the heart about their religious beliefs can be interpreted as being encouraging other people to follow along. I mean, some religions just happen to be more proselytizing than others. But even beyond that, Your Honor, that still begs a more fundamental question in the case is, was this Brittany McCombs speaking as a student, or did this constitute the school endorsing the religion that Brittany McCombs was bringing to the speech?
No, you said what distinguishes this case from those other cases is that she was treated differently from...
Well, that is definitely one...
So you can't go there. You can't discuss the question of whether or not this is a school or not, because that's been taken care of in those other two cases.
I don't believe...
And now you're going to tell us how this case is different, and the way you want to make it different is that she, you know, there was an equal protection violation, some sort of violation of equal treatment because she was treated different from the other student. And that just doesn't wash. I mean, she was treated differently from another student because what she did was quite different from another student.
And one other issue, Your Honor, is the primary control aspect. The whole Colin Lassonde rubric, even if you can see that there was a proselytizing element to her speech, which I don't, you still have to get to primary control in order to be in the rubric of Colin Lassonde. And because that was the premise of that decision. And what we have here is we have suggestions that were given to the speakers. We don't really have primary control. There wasn't a policy for
that. They cut off her mic. I mean, you know, they had control. They cut off her mic. They're not the ones going after her to punish her and saying, we're going to take away your diploma because you didn't do this. She's complaining about the fact that they didn't exercise the control that they had. I mean, she's the one who's saying, I want to use your mic and your audience, and you must give me a forum for my speech. This is the control issue seems to be cut entirely the wrong way for you.
I don't think so, Your Honor, because if you look at primary control at the back end when the censorship occurs, then primary control will always be there as long as it's the student speaking in the
school. That's why this is controlled by Lassonde. And
control of the content of the speech. And the control of the content, at least the way I read Colin Lassonde, meant involvement with the higher-ups in the content of the speech. But in this case, when she was giving suggestions, and then she incorporated those suggestions in a speech, and we don't know yet what the school district did in editing other people's speech and whether they really looked at it for grammatical issues or whether they really exercised control over the content. And if we looked at that as well as with the policy 6113 that the school district had, it very much seems, at least at this stage of the case, to mean that the school district was giving control of the content to the students. And when you have multiple students speaking...
But we do know what other students said. So whether they said it because they got the message or whether they said it because they had something else and that was then edited down, really doesn't matter. The point is that other students didn't engage in this proselytizing, and they weren't cut off.
But at least one other student did speak about her religious viewpoint, and one of the stated reasons for editing Brittany McComb's speech was because it identifies a particular religion. And that would be discrimination about sectarianism versus non-sectarianism, which I believe the Supreme Court rejected in Levy-Weissman, when the argument was made to the Supreme Court that, well, this is really civic religion. It's not sectarian, and so it's okay. And the Supreme Court said, no, it's not. If there's really a danger of endorsement, it doesn't matter whether it's ecumenical or not. That's an establishment.
So you think they should have been more vigorous in their editing?
What I believe is that primary control cuts both ways. If primary control means they endorse the speeches because they edited them, then they endorse Janelle Oler's speech too. And if they endorse Janelle Oler's speech and didn't let Brittany McComb speak, then they're engaging in viewpoint discrimination and an Establishment Clause violation. So the only argument that he has under Colin Lassonde has to be proselytization. But that was not the stated reason for why the school district edited the speech. And I don't think, at least the way I read Colin Lassonde, that's important to know whether intentional discrimination occurred here. And this court shouldn't say, well, even though the stated reason was because she says Jesus Christ, we're going to read it and say it's really proselytization, because that is not what the school board was thinking when it did the editing.
Is your point that it's equally sectarian to say Heavenly Father as it is to say Jesus Christ?
I believe it's sectarian. It's Christian language that's being used.
Could be Jewish language, too.
It could be Jewish language, too. It could be either. And the point is, allowing Janelle Oler to talk about her Heavenly Father in some detail, but not letting Brittany McComb talk about God's love being so great because Brittany McComb identified a particular religion while Janelle Oler did not, would be to put sort of ecumenism or non-denominational religion on a higher plane than sectarian religion, which is what Levy-Weissman counsels against. And to me, those distinctions between Colin Lassonde at this stage of the case raise issues about primary control, about what their motives was, about viewpoint discrimination.
I think we understand your position. Your time is up.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Very briefly, Your Honor, as to the question of the equal protection argument, we have the record. We know exactly what Janelle Oler said, and we know exactly what Brittany McComb was allowed to say. If you look at her speech, she was allowed to make references to her God. And in the speech that she was able to read, she made those references to God and to her personal beliefs, as did Jane Oler. The difference comes when you get to the question of proselytizing, when you start talking about the excruciating death of Christ on the cross. That's where we thought that the proselytizing language ended. And whether you call it identifies a particular religion or you call it deities, actually the word was ditto that was in there, but if you said deities or whatever the reason was, the ultimate question was, is it proselytizing? And if it is, there's no right to give it.
Thank you. Counsel, case is argued, stand submitted.